Mr. Michael, could I ask you a question? His voice was still a child's, but his tone had that grit, the kind that comes from experience. Daniel did not talk like someone with only 16 years under his belt. But one thing I knew for sure, not everyone's year on this earth is created equal. Sure thing, my man, I said. Shoot. Okay, he said, leaning forward to be heard above the noise of the table. Are you happy? My face likely betrayed me. Daniel was rangy and loose in the way of confident teenagers, and with one simple question, he had pulled my skin right off. Sorry, what? I asked, tilting my ear forward. I'd heard him just fine, but I was thrown off. The smile across my face was for defense, honed over many years of self-protection, but Daniel saw right through it. Maybe that's why he asked the question in the first place. Are you, like, happy? He asked again, a little more hesitant, more like a teenager. Maybe he sensed my nervousness. Daniel and I had known each other for only a few hours, but I was already struck by how this kid talked. When I met him, through members of the ACLU of Ohio, one of the first things he said was, "Yeah, I've been working to turn my life around." Turn my life around? What kid talks like that? What does it say about America that the life of a 16-year-old boy was already so far in the wrong direction that he needed to turn it around? Daniel was from a rough part of Cleveland, a city that often had one of the highest murder rates in the country. Too much death, he had said earlier. A lot of friends dying or in jail. He lived one block over from the projects, and that closeness wasn't just about geography. He was teetering on the edge between two worlds, and turning his life around meant facing threats on both sides. One threat was the gangs and the violence that grew out of them. Sometimes people in the streets are bullied and they need protection, he told me. They're sick of being the one who's the victim, getting guns pulled on them, and they turn into the person that starts doing stuff like that. Yeah, I get it, I said. I remember gangs forming in the Brooklyn projects of my youth. It felt like overnight it went from a rivalry between buildings and courts, kids stuff, into violent gangs. Some of them came together because they wanted to, and some because they felt they needed to. From what I could see, not much had changed, except each generation is starting a little earlier than the last. There's people younger than me that carry guns now. It's crazy, he said. 14-year-olds walking around with guns you see on an officer, and they're not little guns. They really got stuff. Daniel told me a story about how one night he was walking to his friend's building and looked down to see a bright green beam, like from the sights of an automatic weapon, on his chest. Instantly, he froze. The beam lingered. He didn't know whether to turn around and run or what. Paralyzed, he just stood there. And then the beam disappeared. When his heart stopped rumbling, he took off running down the street. It's moments like these, a fear that most can't imagine, a stress that doesn't just pass, that makes some people's years weigh heavier than others. The other threat came from those who should be protecting him. Cleveland was actually the birthplace of Stop and Frisk, an excuse to harass black and brown citizens on their way to work or school. Daniel told me about times he was held up at the mass transit station for no reason, handcuffed to a bench for suspicion of carrying drugs while all he had was a backpack of school books. Calm and polite to the officers, Daniel had had enough of these police encounters to know they were looking for a reason to escalate. Most black men know this from experience. Cops doing things just because they can, because it sends a message about power and belonging. It's a trap, because if you react, you just feed into it. So the best move is to be quiet, to take it, though every fiber in your being wants to explode. I think it's all like a setup, man, Daniel said. It's designed for you to fail out here for real. He's not wrong. He told me another story that just tore at my insides. When Daniel was 13, he and his friends went out to a nice neighborhood to trick-or-treat on Halloween. Out of the ghetto into the suburbs where all the mansions at, he said. Once you go under the bridge, the whole scenery changes. but a group of black boys on the clean white sidewalks, knocking on the doors of clean white houses, made some people nervous. And people pay good money to live in places where they don't ever have to feel nervous. So neighbors called the cops, who actually showed up. The cops told us we couldn't be there, Daniel said, that we were in the wrong neighborhood.